If you only listen to our podcasts, I want to encourage you to visit unfetteredmind.org. Here you'll find, free of charge, dozens of original articles and contemporary translations of Buddhist texts and prayers. If you find these helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to expand the website and support your practice. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, a practice for releasing emotional reactions.
This morning, I want to do two things. First is to define a context a bit more extensively for our practice. And second is to go through the particular technique that we'll be working with today, which is based on the full awareness of breathing. Now, when we approach practice, we almost always come to it, at least in the beginning, with the idea that we're going to get something out of it, or get something from it. And while that's inevitable, it's also a bit of a problem, because right from the start, it's very easy to have this constant appraisal. How am I doing, or am I getting there? Is this right, and so forth. Buddhism, for reasons which I don't feel qualified to go into, and I can't say that I really understand, has always placed a great deal of emphasis on this quality of knowing and trusting knowing. So that's really the heart and essence. And that there are many different paths in Buddhism to that knowing. In some traditions of Buddhism, it comes through contemplation of things like impermanence, which by studying the way things arise in one's experience, one comes to know very deeply the nature of experience itself. In other traditions, it comes through cultivating compassion, through which we come to know, actually, all of the ways in which we hang on and protect a sense of I. In other traditions, it comes through faith and devotion, that by placing your trust faith in a teacher sometimes, in the Dharma itself, in a certain way of doing things. And trusting that completely, you come to know all the ways you can't trust and don't trust. So this quality of knowing is very, very important. Really is, I feel, the very heart of Buddhist practice. And this knowing is not what we ordinarily understand as knowing. It's not a knowing about. That's the kind of thing we get through our education system, through study and so forth. We know about a lot of things. And while that's one form of knowing, it's very heavily dependent on a sense of separation, of I know about that. There are other kinds of knowing which you might say is the knowing how to do. And this is not an intellectual knowledge, but it's a knowing that comes through practice, through training, and so forth. Chuang Tzu describes one of his poems describes a wheelwright who says to the Duke, who's reading a book, says, well, what are you reading? He says, the knowledge of men. And the wheelwright says, alive or dead? And the Duke says, dead. And the wheelwright shakes his head and said, then you're just studying the dust they left behind. And the Duke takes umbrage at this and said, you better say more about this. I'll cut your head off. Being a Chinese duke, you could do things like that. The wheelwright says, well, look at it from my point of view. Here I am, a wheelwright. And I shape the metal, which goes around the wheel. If I work too tightly, it doesn't work. If I work too loose, the wheel doesn't work. You just have to do it the right way. But how you do that, I can't even explain to my own son. So what you're reading in these books is just the dust they left behind. They took everything they really knew with them. This is knowing how to do things. And it's a more intimate form of knowledge, because there isn't the separation as in the knowing about. Much closer. In Buddhism, we go for a different kind of knowing. It's the knowing which is not separate from the experience itself. Now that may sound mysterious, perhaps even mystical, but it's something we touch into, every one of us, usually many times a day, many times every day, and don't notice. Because there are many times in every day where we're just there, and there's a response, and the response doesn't come from thinking about or just from the habituation knowing what to do. It's an actual response to the situation, but comes from a knowing which is not separate from experience. The Zen tradition probably among the traditions of Buddhism, is probably the one that makes this kind of knowing as explicit as possible. And so you find that their versions of traditional stories bring this out. And one is the story of how Ananda became enlightened. Now, in the Theravadan tradition, the story is told as follows. After Buddha died, Ananda, who was Buddha's cousin and could just hear everything Buddha said and immediately it was in his memory. He had a phonographic memory. So everybody relied on him, you know, what did Buddha say on such and such an occasion? And Buddha, Ananda would just tell them. But even though he was at Buddha's side for 40 years, pretty well. Buddha lived to 80 and Ananda was his attendant all of that time. He never came to complete understanding. So at the first council after Buddha died, Ananda figured he would, it was meant to be for all the arhats, the ones who had some degree of understanding. Ananda figured he would just go because he knew that everybody would rely on his memory of Buddha's teachings. But he went, and Kasyapa, who was one of Buddha's principal disciples, said, you can't come in. And that this was just crushing for Ananda. So he went back to his hut and was just about to lie down on his mat. And just as he was lying down, the effect of not being able to be in the first council and the shock of Buddha's death and everything like that, everything fell away. And he woke up. And in the Theravadan tradition, it says this is the only instance they know where a person woke up when they were neither sitting, nor standing, nor lying down. But the Zen version of this story is a little different. Ananda approaches the first council, and there's Kasyapa at the door, and says, no, you can't come in. And so Ananda's not happy about this, and he walks away. And Kasyapa goes, Ananda! And with absolutely no hesitation, Ananda turns and says, yes. And he wakes up. It's the knowing which is not separate from experience. It's right there. So the shout by Kasyapa, Ananda was just in that state in which everything was just let go because of his disappointment and everything like that. Kasyapa shouts, and Ananda's right there with experience. So there's no separation between the Ananda and the yes. What Ta Kwan describes as a gap. There's no gap, not even a gap in which a hair can enter. So that's the union of knowing and experience. And it is that natural knowing, which is how we actually are. We function under the illusion that we are separate from what we experience. And it's in the talk yesterday afternoon, that was what I was trying to point out, that that is the illusion. It's not that what appears is an illusion. The illusion is that we are separate from what we experience. And that natural knowing is what we seek to uncover and live from in our lives. And every tradition of Buddhism has its own way of approaching that. The practice we're going to do now and this is a very, very ancient method or approach in Buddhist practice. We use the breath as a basis in which to move, or on which to move into the union of knowing and experience. Now, as I said yesterday, this particular technique is based on the Full Awareness of Breathing Sutra, which, along with the Foundation of Mindfulness Sutra, are the two core sutras of the Theravadin tradition and also the basis of the Zen tradition. And it's well worth reading these, and neither of them are particularly long. They're quite concise and compact. And there's endless amount of commentary that can be given on them. And Thich Nhat Hanh, and many of you I know have done retreats with him, is a very, quite an amazingly skillful teacher. I'm very, very impressed with his ability to take what can be quite abstruse aspects of Buddhist practice and make them very alive and very, very accessible. And 1989, I was at a retreat with him that he was giving to mental health professionals. And he took this bit of Abhidharma describing the emergence of experience, consciousness, and subject-object framework, which is really dry technical stuff. And just it was just beautiful the way he expressed it and made it very, very alive. And so he has taken the Full Awareness of Breathing Sutra, which has actually 16 steps in it, brought it down to 5. Now, I say steps, but this is really to be understood as phases. So it's not like you walk through this, but you work in one phase and it will mature into a second, and into the third, into the fourth, and the fifth. And that's very important, is to allow that maturation to take place naturally, rather than trying to force it. And the other element that Thich Nhat Hanh brings into this, which is so useful, is how to hold something in attention. And the image he uses is that of holding a newborn, your own newborn child. And the adjective that is probably most apt in English for this is tenderly, the adverb. And tenderness is a very interesting word, because while it certainly carries the idea of gentleness, it's not just soft. There has to be something behind that tenderness. So when you're holding a baby, you can't be completely relaxed, because you actually have to support and hold it. At the same time, if you're holding with any kind of tension or something like that, then you just hurt the child. There are many parts of our experience which we, for one reason or another, are alienated to a greater or lesser extent. And this technique is about holding those elements of our experience from which we are alienated, or they are alienated from us, i.e. there is a real sense of separation. So I want to do this in the form of a guided meditation so that you have the idea of it. And to begin with, I want you to choose a painful experience, a difficult feeling, maybe a situation, interaction that is painful for you. And positive interactions can be difficult just as much as negative ones. So it doesn't have to be necessarily negatively toned. It can be a problem, an emotion, or some actual physical or emotional pain. And just bringing it to mind, you notice, like, I'm here and that's there. And we don't want to deal with it. That's how we all are. We'd be much happier if it would just go away. But it's part of our experience. And because we are ultimately not separate from our experience, sooner or later, we're going to have to deal with it. And by pushing it away, or erecting a wall, or not dealing with it, we're actually creating an imbalance in our world of experience, which manifests as imbalance in our lives, and can lead to, in the case of interactions with other people, and the disruption or even the dissolution of relationships which we value. So this is quite important. So the first phase is breathing in. I experienced this, and I'm going to use the word feeling, but it could be emotion, it could be pain, it could be problem. And you just fill in the blank. So let's just do that. You take this, you say, breathing in, I feel this pain. You breathe in, breathing out, I feel this pain. With each breath, breathing in, I feel this pain. Breathing out, I feel this pain. Now in the beginning, depending on what you've chosen, that may be a bit like a hot potato. Ow. So there are two methods I found which can at least get us in touch with it to some extent. The first is, okay, that's too hot, too difficult, too much for my capacity of attention at this point. So, experience 1/10 of it, or 1/100, or 1/1000. And that approach works for some people. For other people, they find it more helpful to think, well, that's too close. If I put it on the other side of the room, well, maybe on the other side of town. So it's, quotation marks, a safe distance away, but still in one's awareness. So the first step is just to bring it into awareness, either a small piece of it or at a proximity that you can handle. And that's for you to determine in your own practice. So, set it up that way, whatever is appropriate for you, we go back to phase one. Breathing in, I experience this pain. Breathing out. And imagine holding the pain tenderly in your attention, which means you're not going to do anything to it, and you're not trying to get anything from it. You're just holding it. You're holding it very, very gently. Do that. Phase two starts almost immediately. In phase two, we become aware of our reactions to that pain. Basically, there are three kinds of reactions that arise. There are reactions in the body. In some cases, we may flinch or tense against the pain. Like in a defensive posture or something. Maybe there are feelings of nausea or discomfort in various parts of our body. But there are actual physical reactions to the pain or the feeling. Secondly, there are emotional reactions. With the pain or the feeling, when you start holding it, you may feel some fear or some anxiety. Maybe there's some anger or sadness. Maybe jealousy comes in, or grief, or wanting. There are all of these different possibilities. And those are the emotional reactions. And then there are the stories and associations. Oh, this is always happening to me. I always get into this kind of mess. Or, this has never happened to me before. I don't understand how this could have possibly happened. Or, this was all my fault. Or, this was terrible, what people did to me. How could they treat me like that? There are all of these different stories. So, the second phase is, breathing in, I experience the reactions to the pain. Breathing out, I experience the reactions to the pain. And start with the physical. And when you can be in the physical reactions, then include the emotional. And when you can be in the physical and the emotional, then include the stories, the associations, the cognitive reactions. And as you do this, you'll find yourself moving into a fuller experience of the pain or feeling itself. So phase two builds on phase one and actually enriches it. So let's do that for a few minutes together. Breathing in, I feel the reactions to the pain. Breathing out, I feel the reactions to the pain. And just as you hold the initial pain or feeling tenderly, so also hold all of the reactions in your body, the emotional reactions, and the stories, tenderly in attention. Don't try to make them one way or the other. Don't try to get rid of the physical discomforts. Just hold them tenderly in tension and let them be experienced. Phase three begins with the discovery that even though we're in the presence of a uncomfortable or difficult pain or feeling, we can actually be in that experience and quiet, calm. That is, we can be experiencing the pain and all of the reactions to the pain, and that can all be going on, and yet there is the capacity to have a sense of calm in all of that. So the third phase is breathing in, I experience calm with this pain. Breathing out, I experience calm with this pain. Now, I'm doing this, taking you through this. You may or may not be there with your particular pain, something like that. But the possibility is there. And if you have it at an appropriate distance from you, or just working with the right fraction of it, then you can experience, oh, yes, I can experience this and be calm. I don't have to be fighting against it. So let's just do this for a few minutes. Breathing in, I experience calm in the feeling. Breathing out, I experience calm with the feeling. And the fourth phase begins with the discovery that in that calm we can actually relax. We discover, sometimes to our surprise, a sense of ease. So here's this difficult feeling which we are experiencing. But our experience now has a basis of calmness, and we begin to relax into the feeling. And this is the beginning of a very important point in practice, resting in the experience. By this point in this process, we have a pretty full experience of the feeling and everything that's going on with it. And we've discovered the calm, and now we begin to rest in the experience. That's that sense of ease or relaxation. As Gunaratna says, when your mind joins with the object of attention, body and mind both relax. That's what's being pointed to here. So we'll just do this for a few moments together, but go back to that sense of calm and then just rest in the calm, letting the feeling and all of the reactions be there, but resting in the calm at the same time. Breathing in, I experience ease in the feeling. Breathing out, I experience ease in the feeling. Now you may find that when you start relaxing in the feeling, you suddenly experience the feeling more completely, and you tense up again, push it away. So this takes you back to phase one, but now you're working at a deeper level. And the way this particular practice works, there's a constant cycling, going through phase one, phase two, sometimes back to phase one right there, phase three, phase four, you begin to relax, you experience more of the feeling, or now you're able to bring the feeling closer to you, and everything becomes more vivid, more awake. And so now you work again with phase one. So there's a constant cycling back, but each time you cycle back, you're moving into a deeper and deeper experience of the feeling. You're moving closer to the feeling, the experience of the feeling itself. And that process goes on and on, depending on the nature of the feeling, the degree of conditioning, how it's arising and so forth. That process can take anywhere from 5 seconds to 5 decades. So there's no specific time frame. And you may find at certain points that when you begin to relax, that feeling dissolves and just seems to vanish, and there's something else there. And if that's the case, then you begin working with that. Because you see that the original feeling was actually a layer which was obscuring something else underneath. And now you start working with what's underneath. And in either of these ways, you're moving deeper and deeper into your own experience. Fifth phase happens naturally, one can say spontaneously, and it happens when you actually join with the feeling. That is, there's no longer any separation between one's the knowing and the experience. Or, to put it another way, the illusion of being separate from the experience crumbles. And what happens there is that an understanding naturally arises. You understand the feeling, you understand what it is, how it arises, and you can be fully in the experience of the feeling, and there's no confusion. So the fifth step is breathing in, I understand this feeling. Breathing out, I understand this feeling. Now, when that understanding arises, often it will take some form of cognitive thing. Oh, it's this and this and this, and people say, oh, I've had this insight, etc. Don't hang on to the insight. You go to with the insight, you actually fall into distraction. It arises. Rest in the understanding, not the formulation. The understanding or the knowing is like a quality of knowing there. Rest in that. It will feel, most of the time, like you have no reference. But that knowing is the union of knowing and experience. Now you're no longer separate from what you experience. So this technique uses the breath as a way of coming into the union of knowing and experience. Go through these 5 steps or 5 phases. Let them unfold naturally. Thich Nhat Hanh uses the image of holding the feeling tenderly in attention. Another image which I found very helpful is to imagine that you're holding a flower, but the flower hasn't opened. And your attention is like the sun. And just being in the breathing, letting your attention be with this flower, then the flower in its own time opens in the warmth of your attention.
When you say hold as if you're holding a baby, it seems to me that that puts a kind of intentionality into the feeling as it emerges that creates a distance, a separation, that you can be there. Why not just be aware of it?
That's fine. Quite often, when people are given the instruction, just be aware of the feeling. There's a sense of separation. Feeling's there, I'm here, I'm aware of it. When you imagine that you're holding the feeling, now there's an actual connection. You're really connected with it. You're feeling the feeling. You're not simply aware of it. You're feeling it and experiencing. Don't forget, awareness, and this may not be the case with you, but many people, when they hear the word aware, the way that they understand that is primarily cognitively. But that is only one aspect of awareness. There's tactile, awareness through the body. There's emotional awareness, sensing the emotion. And then there's the understanding or cognitive awareness. And in this practice, we're working with all three. And that's why sometimes poetic or metaphorical language, such as tenderness or holding it that way, helps people to remember that this is not simply a cognitive thing. There's a tactile, emotional relationship. So it moves them into a more complete experience. And you can judge whether it's useful to you or not.
Retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.